there. Welcome back to the Breach Burp Podcast. I'm here with Brian and Zach, and we're here to have kind of a broad topic today, talking about players, growing communities, where we've been, where kind of thing. So why don't you take it away, Brian?
Thanks, James. I know we've been talking about this for a while, overall about our communities. We've been trying to build a bunch of people up here in Michigan, which I'm just going to kind of read what I wrote down so I can get this clearly and succinctly. But all games live and die by its player base. And for every game to thrive, we as a community need to be aware of our actions and our habits, as well as how we, our own minds, minis, our gear, everything that we bring to the game, how that other people see it. We've been trying to build the community here in Michigan, and we have been actively trying to recruit new players into the game. And overall, this has led us into more conversations about our experiences and what we get out of it. We were all newbies at one point, and today we're kind of looking at that evolution of us as players and evolution of the new people coming in, what we see, how we are influencing them, good or bad, and kind of the advancements and everything that goes with it. I know we hopefully are going to talk about what we see as player like levels and types, player cliches, everything from accessories to the terrain that Malivo brings to painted minis or not painted minis. So I guess overall, what I'm just saying is we all started somewhere. We're going to talk about where we're at, like you said, and then what keeps drawing us to the game, what keeps other people coming in. So to dig in, we kind of talked a little bit in advance about player levels. We kind of broke it down into five little subcategories that start off at the very, like, dabbler is what we have it currently named, which is someone who may play a game here or there, someone who might just actually be interested in the hobby side. Like, the actual tabletop game might be something that they don't even really enjoy, so it's the very rarely playing. The beginner, where everyone gets to is or starts at, is someone who plays once in a while. So the beginner, someone who plays every once in a while. Games take a long time. You know, you don't really know the rules yet. You're still learning them. You don't normally finish games sometimes. Games could take like 4 or 5 hours. And everything is really fresh, and it's usually pretty exciting. Just because you killed something might be the highlight of the game. You may have lost, but you managed to actually kill something or score those points. From there, the area kind of branches off to your own play styles, where you can either become a casual player, a tournament player, or like the hardcore player, like the super elite. Casual players play when they have time, you know, maybe once or twice a month. You don't worry about completing games in under 2 hours. You're just there to have fun. Maybe more into it for the social side more than actual competing. But you just love the game and you love the models. Tournament players, someone who actually goes to compete. Sometimes you can start being netlisters. You're looking around for what's good. Usually listen to all the strategies, lots of podcasts. Maybe not this one. We haven't done too many deep dives yet. But you're here now. Someone who plays in the local leagues and tournaments, even travels to play in tournaments. A lot of focus on the actual knowing the rules, reading the errata, all the stuff that you would need to be a tournament player. And lastly, kind of that super top-end player that only a few people tend to get to are like those very hardcore players. The combination of like a tournament player and a rules lawyer, someone knows everything about the game, lives and breathes and dies by the game, listens to all the strategy, knows the meta inside and out, can tell you what counters what. And sometimes they're not the funnest to play with because they will play to win, usually no matter what, even if you're a newbie. They still might enjoy the fluff, but they generally are playing a lot. They travel all over to play, and they will do anything for a game. With that all being said, I've talked a lot, so I think Zach will start off by kind of asking, where currently do you see yourself in the like type of player that I just listed off?
Honestly, I'm mostly in the Turner section. I can rules lawyer, and I'm often asked questions about those things, but honestly, I'm more of like, you know, I I play tournaments. I go to them when I can. I travel when I can. I enjoy the fluff quite a bit. Of course, I'm very competitive, but I'm not so. I don't play multiple times a week. Usually it's like one, two games a week, if that. Oftentimes I'll take weeks off at a time. It just kind of depends on how life goes. I love it, and I very much am very deep rooted in the game, but I don't like breathe by it to the point to where I don't play Vassal 7 times a week and get games in like our buddy Tony's been to do in the past.
So, do you find yourself as a the tournament, and no one at home can see me using air quotes a lot, but as a tournament style player, are you drawn more to playing the games because of the actual strategy involved, or what makes you think you are a tournament player? Like, what brings you to that way compared to like a casual player?
A lot of it is like I find great enjoyment out of the strategy aspects of the game. Of course, like socially and everything, I enjoyed as well. Like going to tournaments is a great social experience on top of being a good, competitive and strategic experience. I don't go so overboard, I feel, with it to where I would go hardcore, but I'm also not so focused on like the painting and aesthetic sides so much that I would fall into the casual, and that's why I feel like tournament is basically where I'm at, because I dabble up and down categories a bit, because I care a lot about the aesthetics of my models and of the tables and things like that as well, but those just enhance the overall experience for me rather than being the point of the experience for me.
I mean, we all get our different joys. I actually myself enjoy as a tournament style player. I would not go hardcore. But James, where do you think you kind of fall into these things?
Well, I'm kind of a weird guy because I usually run tournaments in town or in the state, I guess. So I've only actually participated as a player in one tournament. But I relate to a lot of things in that category. I listen to all the podcasts, a lot of them I listen to twice because I'll miss stuff. Play pretty much every damn week. And when MWS is going, I'm playing 2 games a week. All that being said, though, I probably skill-wise fit more into the casual level because I lose a lot of games, and I also believe in this thing called the heart of the cards. And sometimes I don't listen to people when they tell me things are bad. I'll just run Lucius for 20 games in keyword and lose a bunch of those games. So.
So you find yourself in between casual and like that tournament style where you want to play, but you also sometimes don't care as much about winning because you really want to try to play the things you like. I was guess I'd say, what is the thing that you find most? If you had to pick, like, is it playing to win, playing to like, could you get enjoyment out of the strategy, or if it's more, I just like playing the game because these models I seem to have a lot of fun with, or these lists. Where kind of do you get the most enjoyment out of the game?
Weirdly enough, I'm finding it most enjoyable recently to get being ground into the dust. I love getting stopped by really good people and watching somebody who's really good at the game run at a high efficiency with their crew. It shows me a lot of holes in my play, and I think I do improve pretty dramatically whenever I play someone who's a lot better than me. So I might go through kind of a Dark Souls-like masochistic streak here. Just start playing around and just lose all GG3.
About to
We'll
say, I
see.
feel like we just learned some interesting facts about the type of per games is today.
Yeah, I'm didn't realize that you're that masochistic, but definitely the heart of a tournament player, in the way we described it, so definitely stay there.
Except he's very casual when it comes to refusing to play Serena Bone anywhere other than in Nightmare.
Yeah, and making sure that Lucius 1 gets its glory day, even though right now it's very difficult still to win with Lucius 1.
Hey man, it's admirable, just because it sucks, he's your boy anyways, you're gonna play him no matter what. It's like me and Molly, man. Like I mean, I figured out how to make Molly work, but that was just because when you throw a crew with, like, 5 min 3 beaters at somebody, eventually something's going to work. Something's going to have to die.
Yeah, there should be like a subset of tournament player that I'm going to name after James, now being the masochist. Just not always great, but love to get ground into the dust.
Yeah.
Which actually, I mean, speaking of kind of the subsets of players or just like characteristics of people, the kind of cliches that we get or some of the wording and terminology we use to refer to each other as players... some of the things that you might hear around we've talked about are like the power gamers or netlisters, you know, people who are always out there. Not so much in Malifaux, but it still happens where you hear, let's say on a podcast that, oh, Yoko 2 is amazing. I'm going to play Yoko 2. Or you find out Andre's been repping, you know, a while ago, Nekoma and destroying everybody. So now you find those people who are netlisters are like, hey, power gamers, I need to try that out too. There's the people who are the like super fluffy thematic players who won't really play anything outside of keywords. Like it's more about the actual aesthetics of the game. The hobbyists, you know somebody, and at least I know at least one person here who even goes above and beyond me where everything that they play is painted. The basing is always incredible. They may have some great terrain. Like I enjoy it, but you know, there's those people out there that are like the super hobbyist side. We have I put on here like the collector. You know, some people know that somebody who owns like everything in the faction, and then from there on goes everything in the game. It has like 4, 5, 6, 9. You know, all the factions at this point. Then there's kind of just like the lifer players, players that have been maybe around since Mark 1 of Malifaux. You know, they might dabble in a lot of the alternate formats. They may have taken breaks from the game. You know, when you're talking to them, those lifer players usually have a story to tell or two about how things used to be and this is better or that was better back in the day. And I guess for me, the type of player I was before I kind of start calling you guys was I was kind of an all-in player. I went from, hey, this game looks cool, I'm gonna buy Misaki 2, to a month later, I have the Thunders faction. I like got it all. I can't play it all yet, but I own it all. I love everything. I'm gonna get it all and know it all. How did you think you got into this, James? Like, if you were to any of those, or I guess where did you start out with, like, in the collection of things?
Well, when I started out, I just had Dreamer, and I played him for a very long time. I've said it on here before. Shout out to Jeremy. He shot Dreamer off the board turn 2 of my first game of Malifaux. It was a great time. Lost the game. I really went hard on Dreamer for a long time. I don't know that he clicked with me initially. I played Warhammer before Malifaux, so I had kind of a weird idea of wargaming and was not used to the fast pace of Malifaux games and how responsive everything is compared to Warhammer.
I like how you say Malifaux is fast paced, but War Machine finished in under 2 hours, and it's hard for even competitive players in Malifaux to finish in 2 hours.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Nowadays, I probably am closest to, like, thematic. I play models because I want them to work, not because they work a lot. I like to run weird stuff to throw people off guard or just to try and figure out maybe the secret sauce of some tech that maybe somebody just hasn't unlocked yet.
So maybe that snowflake type of gamer, that other type of person that you hear thrown about there, who you want to play that special something that someone else doesn't?
Oh, yeah. Well, that was a big motivation for Lucius and Euripides for a long time, like before he had the Damned or the title. People were not hot on him. Still not hot on the first one, but the Shockwaves, they'll get you.
I still think you have great play with Euripides, and I'm surprised he doesn't get out there more often. Even as a decent player myself, I struggle to play against Euripides.
He has some cool stuff for sure.
Zach, have you do you find yourself in any of those categories, or a little bit of all of them, or even have some other categories to add in about some player cliches or player types that we haven't talked about?
Honestly, I feel like I span the spectrum, because like admittedly, like the thing that got me into miniatures games to begin with was terrain. I saw a table and I was like, that looks fucking. What is that? You know. So despite the fact that I'm usually pretty known for being a competitive player that cares about competitive play, I also personally have a large chip of pride for the aesthetics. As you guys know, I'm very particular about my basing on models specifically. And so I'd like to, you know, say that I have some of the best bases out there for some models. Shout out to my EVS crew and those poured resin bases. They are gorgeous. but like, yeah, like I go all over the place with it. Like I tend to prefer in keyword play. I tend to dislike pulling too hard out of keyword unless it's some weird, stupid little jank thing that I personally enjoy. But that's why I'm so particular about like bringing the corpse curator with my shtuck list, because I just like it. I mean, I don't like painting, but I'm kind of okay at it. And whenever I get in the mood, you know, I'll rip a bunch of stuff out. But I'm also like not opposed to just paying somebody who's better than me to do it. And I mean, I have a whole room full of terrain. Basically, I could fill like 5 tables with terrain and have them be properly covered and have a majority of it painted and nice. Because admittedly, in my mind, like having the visual appeal of it is something that people are going to notice before anything else. And that's the thing that they're going to, like I said, you know, they're going to walk into that room and go, that's fucking cool. What is that? And then you kind of go in and you get what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually kind of getting to that core of why we're talking about everything we have so far is we've evolved from, you know, when we showed up, I first got into this, I played other war games, but it's completely different stepping into Malifaux. When you do see those awesome minis and there's only, you know, 10 or on a side, but they're all distinct, they all are different, mm-hmm. and they look badass sitting on the table, you know, that can bring you in.
Yeah, and like one of my issues though is like, because like I started the game with Dreamer and Pandora, right? And like mechanically I enjoyed them, but they're very mean to play into like other new players, so I moved off of them to other things I thought looked cool. So like, but I have a bad tendency of reading cards and going, oh, that sounds fun, and then I buy the thing. And the only thing that's kept me from like collecting more than like half of the factions in the game is the fact that I've kind of had to put my foot down and go, I'm not buying Guild, I'm not buying Bayou, I'm not buying Arcanists.
Eventually, you're gonna turn into that lifer that has everything.
I'm going to try my darndest not to. Honestly, that's what Corey's there for. Corey, one of my locals, he buys the other half. I buy one half. That way we cover most of the things. And then I don't have to because he does. Or at least that's the intent and goal.
So kind of getting into some of the last bit of topics that we have before we start tying everything in. The terrain aspect of Malifaux. It is different than some war games. Some war games, you know, have hills and heights and things that are different than Malifaux. Malifaux is kind of a simplified but very effective rules on terrain compared to some. We're not Infinity. When it comes to the terrain, does it have to look appealing to you on the table? Like, first off, for you as a player, can you play with, you know, a salt shaker as you're blocking terrain and a toaster sitting on the mat? Or do you really need the good aesthetic stuff to enjoy the game?
I prefer it. I can and have played with car keys and salt shakers and a bottle of ketchup as terrain before, way back when I was first getting into this hobby. Many people know I came to Malifaux from Guild Ball. And as much as I like very much loved the competitive aspect to scratch that itch, Guild Ball is not known for its terrain. There is very little, if any, terrain in Guild Ball. And the terrain that is used is oftentimes 2D terrain, which, in my personal opinion, outside of incredibly tight games like Guild Ball, 2D terrain is best used for things like severe terrain, like rocks and shit like that. 2D terrain that is there to represent actual 3D objects bothers the piss out of me. And I would rather have little moments of bumping physical terrain and everything and deal with that minor inconvenience for the sake of the aesthetics of it, just because to me it's a package deal. I like all of those things to come together to create this overall experience that I feel like you can't really get anywhere else. And so 2D terrain for me.
I mean, I definitely agree. The only 2D, I mean, I do love 2D terrain for forests and rivers and lakes. Anything that
Right.
is, or fog banks, but anything else that is supposed to have height, I do like to see, height on the table. Hills should actually be taller.
Yeah, like one of the things I like doing specifically is like I do it a bunch where I got like big old like trees or various things, and I got these massive like rocky kind of alcove things that I use for severe terrain or something, and I'll slap it underneath part of the tree to have it up and around there to kind of make a like an interesting combination where you got build blocking thing here, but then there's like severe kind of going around it, and I think there's neat ways that you can incorporate stuff like that.
I mean, I also think Malifaux still has some room to grow in some of the things it can do with the terrain, or for the community to be a little more creative with it than what you see in like Vassal. But James, I know we've been talking a lot. You yourself, you kind of play in the Grand Rapids. Oh, I play on the other side of the state. Do you enjoy? I know you use 2D terrain, I think, right now.
Yeah, my buddy Mike, shout out as well. He loaned me some 2D terrain like a year ago now, and I've been a terrible person and not giving it back, but he's been kind enough to let me borrow it just because we've been having a lot of people playing recently. For me, for terrain, I guess I'm very much like a mechanical player where aesthetics is very secondary to me. There are times where I'm like inspired to think about painting and basing and stuff, but I'm totally fine with like 2D terrain or crappy terrain, cardboard terrain, whatever. I do prefer nice terrain, but I guess I've played in a lot of different situations and I'm just used to it now.
So as the henchman of kind of the western half of Michigan, being someone who is at the events at least and seeing more of the reactions, not focused on the games, would you say there's more of a draw though for the community when you're just seeing 2D terrain, or do you think the 3D terrain actually helps bring people over to the tables?
Oh yeah, as far as like trying to pull people in, 3D terrain is a huge difference. You can't really pull yourself into the game and the scenario and who's on the board and everything with 2D terrain. It really does make it more like a computer game, I guess, where it's just there because it serves function, but you can really tell a story. Like, shout out to Doug Bowman. He made all those casino things, the casino set, like Watchtower. Like, people really go all out with terrain, and I'm definitely looking to buy up a bunch of it pretty soon here to up my game and make our
You
tables
plan
a
on
little more
picking
impressive.
stuff up from Doug himself?
Yeah, we'll see. Depends
Because
if I
I'm
can
very
bring.
much doing that myself, actually. Yeah, shout out to Doug. I literally got the play mat, and I'm ordering up that casino set specifically. Also, getting his graveyard set because he added me to the graveyard, and that makes me very happy in a stupid, childish, giddy way. And I can't help it. I want that stuff now.
Say not to make this into a full shout out for Doug, and I think it's Top Doug Designs.
Yeah.
But I've actually just recently reached out to him to try to do a 3D design for something for us here at Breachburnt to make a model of like a severe pond with some tentacles or something coming out, something that kind of represents the something where we're from, and to give that out as 3D printable terrain for people who come out to tournaments and stuff, or wherever we go.
I want one. I want one now. I want it, and I want it painted, because I'm lazy.
I just need to get Doug first. So, Doug, if you're listening to this before we get this ironed out, I think that is something we're definitely interested in, because it's something that's creative terrain, too. It could actually be as hazardous that, you know.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he's been doing a lot of things with lights lately. If there's a way where you could figure out how to, like, make this pond with, like, the tentacles coming out, but then, like, set up, like, a light underneath it to make the pond glow like it's a portal. Man, you got me all excited, you son of a bitch.
And to think, overall, you know, I mean, I also started with, hey, I had 2D terrain from War Machine days. And to be honest, you know, that doesn't attract a lot of people. When it's a flat board and you're like, oh, War Machine brings people in because you just see massive armies sitting on the table. Mm-hmm. While Infinity and Malifaux and others, you know, the terrain matters, I think, when you're drawing those people in. And for a lot of the newbies, we had a couple newer players come down to in Ohio to the Dragon's Roost, where I go most nights to play. And the biggest thing they said coming into this one versus others is, one, the models were awesome, but two, actually having that 3D terrain makes a difference in the feel of the game. Mm-hmm. And so they enjoyed it, and they've been coming down a lot since then. Haven't found crews they really like. They've been bouncing around, but definitely have been enjoying the different aspects, like the cards and the 3D terrain, compared to some of the other things they've tried in the past.
So the game's already got its hooks in them, basically.
Yeah, and that's something that we as the community, people who are already playing, I know, you know, you might not enjoy painting your models, but communities need new players to survive, so sometimes taking that effort to get things to look nice and getting some at least paint on them can help us keep people coming in.
Absolutely.
Yeah, just one thing I just thought of after talking about how great 2D terrain is. One of the first non-model, like, bigger purchases I made for Malifaux was buying Doug's Ice Pillar files, which, in my opinion, are the best Ice Pillars out there. Specifically because I had a bunch of Ice Pillar tokens from Art of War, which is great products, great tokens, but they're flat tokens, and it's supposed to be a height 4 blocking impassable terrain. So I got a bunch of those printed up from one of the guys in town, and I've been rocking those since Euripides came out, basically. So that was definitely nice. A huge thing, and I think it really does make a big difference, even just as far as me thinking about the game. Having a gigantic pillar there draws attention to it, and
yeah, it really like adds a certain level of storytelling to your game, you know, because like somebody could walk up and be like, seeing you do this, and you're like, oh yeah, I'm tossing out these massive ice pillars, and it's like the coolest freaking thing. It's blocking off this section, and like, quite frankly, little flat little tokens just wouldn't convey that the same way, you know. You wouldn't convey that you're like, I'm literally boxing my opponent in. With normal tokens, it just looks like any other game because you got tokens and shit everywhere, but with those, it's like, well, fuck, you know, you're surrounded by these things.
Well, against the right opponent, you're actually KOing their entire crew, so
right.
Yeah, and to Zach's credit there, yeah, Malifaux, as we all know, if you're listening to this, is not without a bunch of different tokens and effects, and it used to be worse with the different distinct things that are out there for conditions and everything. So when you just see a billion flat little tokens on the board, sometimes it is very hard, even as a player, to differentiate everything. So getting the 3D ice pillars definitely helps mentally some of that strain of having to remember what everything is.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of accessories, I know that's kind of the next topic, is in Malifaux, the things you need to yourself buy to play is the crew. You need a ruler, a deck of cards, and then the app or, you know, model cards that come in the thing. That is the bare minimum, but I know I myself started with more than that. I kind of went all in. I initially went in and already had widgets from other games. I had a bunch of dice and a bunch of bases that were in things. But what did I know you came from War Machine, James. What did you start off with accessories-wise when you first started playing the game?
Well, Zach came from War Machine, so I'm not sure who you're talking about.
Oh, sorry.
I did not.
I thought you said you came from War Machine. He came from Guild Ball. What tabletops were you playing before you started?
Warhammer. Yeah.
Oh, Warhammer. Yeah. Sorry, completely different game.
It's all good. Yeah. I played Nurgle in AOS for a while. People know me in town as Granddaddy Nurgle. I still have my great unclean one sitting here growing dust, sadly. But about the question, when I started out, anyway, I was kind of dedicated to playing with a standard deck of cards, because it's a thing you can do, and I thought buying a deck of a fate deck was just throwing money in the trash, because why would you ever need to? I have playing cards at home.
Okay, well, how many decks do you own now? Before we keep going, how many decks do you own?
Probably about 10.
Yeah, I have about 8 or 9 myself after giving away probably 10 decks to different people.
Dang. And we don't even want to talk about how many Zach has.
About to say, I gave away like 3 recently, and I still have like 25 or so odd decks.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, to anybody listening, I collect decks. If you have unique decks that you're willing to get rid of, contact me. I will buy them.
But back to James, sorry to interrupt. It's one of those things that, you know, as a new player, you need a deck. And they do come in possibly with the playing cards. But the artwork on some of these decks, especially when they release the iconic decks again, and I got some of the older school ones that the artwork is great. And I think it actually adds a lot to it. I only play with the decks that I think look cool more than anything else because I stare at those cards so much. You know, that's part of the game for me. But back to your accessories. Outside of the deck, the playing cards, what else did you have?
Yeah. Let's see. I have 2 of the measuring widget things, the 2, 4, 6, and 1-inchers. I have a 4 and a 6 I think I got because I had some extra prize support at the end of a tournament. And then I have a tape measure, which I know is a controversial topic amongst some people in this podcast particularly.
I'm seething, but continue.
Some of us that may have came from Guild Ball, and not that I didn't also play Guild Ball, but...
Yeah, that's my measuring stuff. Tokens, I have... I think Art of War is probably their second edition, and then I bought a couple of extra tokens.
Now, have you bought all that since playing? Or, like, when you started out, did you have any of the tokens or anything, or did you jump right in and buy them all?
I bought them all, like, when I started, because... in second edition, we didn't have this nice fancy app that you can track everything in. Well, I guess you could before, but in second edition, there were maybe hundreds of conditions.
Yeah, it was really difficult.
It was not worth it. So, yeah, I bought those pretty much right away. I have a ton of dice, too. I have a big sack of RPG dice, and I have my little case of Warhammer dice, the D6s. I've had those since I started. I really like them for tracking HP. Just visually helps me and my opponent. That's another good thing about having a Fate deck is the regular playing cards. Some people can't go back and forth between the suits as well as I can when I do it every time. So really, those things in tokens are really good for making sure your opponent is on the same page. Not everyone's as good with the app or as fast with it as we are, so... and in tournaments and stuff, it's better to avoid any kind of miscommunication.
Yeah, and I have a question specifically related to tokens here coming up. But, Zach, when you first started, what did you actually start with play-wise, like widgets and whatnot?
So, as mentioned, I came into this game from Guild Ball. So I have my widget set, which has garnered quite a bit of attention from a number of people. I got it for Guild Ball from a dude called Dionysus Designs. It's basically a 3-layer set that has it's got a 1-2-3 widget in it. It's got 4 through 10-inch sticks on the first layer. On the second layer, it's got movement steppers, and then on the third layer, it's got proxy bases and melee ranges, 1 and 2 inches for each of them. It basically has everything I could ever need. I refuse to use a tape measure ever again. I used it back when I played Dark Age, you know, entirely different time. Things were looser back then. The shame and disgust of a tape measure wasn't quite what it was, but I've since watched enough instances of tape measures zipping back and destroying models and messing up board states and, you know, somebody hovering it over the table just for it to kink and fall down and pendulum destroy a model. And don't even get me started on those floppy Taylor ones that...
Yeah, those are horrible, but...
disgusting nonsense.
Well, those sound like amateurs, Zach. You gotta have some skill with the tape measure.
Some skill? Is that what you want to call it?
Requires skill.
It requires a certain level of lack of shame and self-pride. I mean this with all offense to all people that use these things. But I am very opinionated on it. But ultimately, though, I use widgets because they are just cleaner for play and they're more accurate overall. It's really easy for people to accidentally give themselves half an inch or so on movements with tape measures more so than widgets because, quite frankly, tape measures require two hands to handle most of the time. And so having something that requires both your hands to properly hold to measure and then moving something is going to lead to mistakes, period. So I started with that. I bought up the Art of War set for tokens. I started with some 2E deck, and then I proceeded to buy all the decks. And so I always keep two decks on me. Because I refuse to use the same deck as my opponent, and I've gotten to the point where I have some particularly unique decks now that I don't think that's ever going to happen. But yeah, I own all the things. I have I got a very nice card box that Doug made. I've got the laser sight for line of sight and such. Yeah, I have everything.
So
dude.
The real question I have before moving on, Zach, is now with the reveal of Harold Tull and some of those longer threat ranges, you said you have like up to 12-inch widgets. How do you handle an 18-inch threat range?
Well, so it's up to 10. So with an 18-inch, I would set down the 10-inch, and then I would set down the 8-inch, and it would be 18 inches.
You know, since it doesn't require a line of sight for some of this, could you set those on the board? Or if you're shooting over a forest and all this 3D terrain, how's that going to work?
I mean, I understand that you're making a play at me, and I have relented in saying that, you know, certain particularly long ranges, you know, whatever, you know, use a tape measure to quickly measure it out. Though frankly, when your range is 18 inches, the question is, if it's 18 inches and does not require line of sight, the answer is yes, you can hit it.
yeah, but, I do agree with you, though. I am going for your goat, but...
I guess one last thing. I guess when it comes to the tokens, I usually use physical tokens for tracking things like that, and I use a dry erase marker for doing health. I only really use the app for tracking turns and points. Just because I find doing conditions in the app to be cumbersome. But that's just me personally. And I personally enjoy having a physical representation on the board for conditions and such. I think it's a lot easier for both players to view. I'm going to take a stab at some of my locals, but I don't like it when people write their conditions on their cards because I can't fucking read it. But,
that's actually the next thing I wanted to talk about. I was waiting to get to this, but... When it comes to the state of the board and the mm-hmm. tokens, and I may have mentioned earlier that Malifaux has tons of things,
yes.
You're the type of person that you want everything on the board state. If something has staggered, you want to see it next to that model. You want
yes.
that token out there visible. Are you the same way, James?
Yeah, pretty much. I am a forgetful person, so if I have more tools that will help me forget less, that is... Gonna make me win more games.
Yeah, honestly, there's so many effects and lingering conditions and things that can be applied within this game, with varying times in which they are ended and such, that like I feel like not having a physical reminder out on the board is just going to lead you to be more likely to forget things like that.
I mean, I am too. It's a bunch of my War Machine focus tokens from multiple factions, and I have dice that are all different colors to represent different status effects, and then I actually have the War Machine. I know I keep going back to those tokens, but they're great because they're dry erase and they're small, so you can write status effects on them, write it, and then set it down next to the models. I mean, even at my local area down here in Toledo, there are definitely people, though, who everything's in the cards. And for me, I can't see that. I remind myself, hey, that model's only got, like, 4 health, it's staggered, and then we might forget about it going through the play because it's way over there. I might forget about it.
Right. Yeah, especially for, like, conditions that ended between rounds, you know, like, making sure that, you know, hey, did you take your poison? Did you reduce your poison? Like, it's, you know, like, which, of course, with poison and fire specifically, I use dice for that because they, honestly, I played too many games against, like, Sonya, and it was getting absolutely stacked with fire that I ran out of tokens. I'm like, I run out of tokens every time within, like, one activation from Sonya. I need to go to dice. And to your point, though, about dry erase, like, markers, that's actually something I did for 50 mils. I picked up a whole bunch of clear, really thin 50 mil acrylic things, so I can just use those for all those various 50 mil, like, you know, your pyres and coffins and shit, so I can just set it out there and write on it. It's like, this is a spider web, whatnot.
Yeah, and I say, tying this back into things, you know, we are all pretty far into this. Being a lot of the newbies and stuff, just some tips and tricks for people who might be newer still. I actually got a pack of craft foam that comes in all different kinds of colors. And if you have a 50 mil, a 40 mil, and a 30 mil, you can actually cut for, and it's like a whole pack cost me like $4. If you take the time and effort, you can trace out those bases and get pretty decent, like, durable, like, different proxies for corpses, scraps, schemes. You can write right on it. And, like, for all my pyre markers, I just use the red ones and cut them out as a 50 mil, and now I have 40 pyre markers for when I play Sonya or Karis. And it's just a cheap little hack if you don't want to go out or don't have the money to go buy the really expensive stuff to start off.
To that point, though, for things like that specifically, I would not personally suggest doing that, just for accuracy's sake. The only reason why I say that is because I know you can go to Litco and buy, like I said, these 50 millimeter or whatever size, you know, thin acrylic pieces from them for dirt cheap. It's like a couple dollars for a whole bunch of them, and I feel like that's probably one of the first things I would suggest to a new player to buy is a certain number of markers within those sizes that you can use for stuff like that. Like, you don't need to go out to Art of War and go spend a crap load of money on, you know, corpses and scrap and things of that nature and then wait 7 weeks for it to ship from overseas. Like, there are other options I think are way cheaper and a lot simpler than cutting stuff out. It'd probably be a similar cost in money and just way less cutting, honestly.
And that's kind of why I'm kind of doing this, is to get other people's, like, hey, where did you find stuff when you were a newbie? Because we all started out there. Like my laser line, I went to Harbor Freight and got a laser line for like $3. That's still working to this day. They sell them there and they're amazing. And, you know, you can spend up to like $20-$30 if you're shopping around online for a laser line.
So just to add to my point, because I just felt I needed to look it up, for a 25-pack of 30-millimeter circular acrylic little base things from Litco, it is $7.
So that is something that if we are getting on top of that, James, we'll try to make sure we add that to the show notes for some of this stuff or put it on our Facebook for anyone listening. And you are interested in where we got some of our stuff as we were playing.
because... Yeah, because like that's what I did for like Shadows, honestly. Like Shadow Markers, I could have gone through like Art of War, and it was like $10 for like 5 of them or something. I went through Litco and I just bought like a 30 pack of like their gray, like clear ones for like $10. So
I'd say I got the 30mm ones from a different company that was like a board game place that mm-hmm. was like $6 for 30 of them, and then I just cut out the actual symbols on all the boxes that I buy because I have like 4 factions.
Sure.
And those are all fit right on those 30s, and right. They look really nice and colorful, and they all look
and
like
honestly,
specific
like,
schemes.
Like, Litco is also where I get my sticker magnets for all my bases. So like,
yeah, it's where I got all my magnets too.
Yeah, honestly, like they're amazing. They don't give you the grip of using like rare earth magnets. But honestly, I found that those rare earth magnets are usually too strong, and I end up ripping my models off my bases. And
I've also ripped the magnets that I've put onto the base. Like those rare earths, I've even super glued them to the bottom of the base, and then I yep. pull that off my magnetic tray, and the magnets mm-hmm. are still on the tray in my.
Yep.
Well, and they don't really fit under the new bases anyway, so.
Yeah.
You have to get a very specific size, and like honestly, like in the past, I've gone through the nightmare of like drilling out holes in resin bases to try and slot a magnet up in there, and it's just not fun, dude. So like I cannot recommend those sticker magnets enough. I will say though, apply glue to that and then stick it to your base. Like sure it sticks to it, but that adhesive doesn't last forever. So get those magnets. They're dirt cheap for how many you get in comparison to rare earths. They're really convenient. Cannot endorse them enough.
So this actually brings up one of the other things that as long-term players, we already have these things. But when I started out, I mean, I started way back in 40K forever ago, and I learned this the hard way. My models are so beat up that I still have for 40K because I didn't transport them properly. Now, currently, you know, I use a magnetized carrying case. There's different versions you can get. I mean, you can even just use a toolbox or something that has that metal plate in it. But what do you guys currently use to transport your minis in?
Well, just to start this off, I feel like I should tell a little story about a certain friend we know named Tony.
Oh, no.
Because I started out in Malifaux pretty much magnetizing everything and putting it on a cookie sheet, which I still do. And I tell the story to people when they look at it and consider it as an option that's viable. So this is the story. So Tony is a great guy. He was, I don't remember the event he was at specifically, but he was at a thing. He had his models in his car. He was fiddling with a bunch of stuff in the back seat. So the sheet of models slid out of the car into the middle of the street. So that's bad. But then a semi-truck came by and ran over the models. So his entire collection was destroyed in a matter of, I don't know, 10 seconds. And according to, from what I've heard from locals, people pulled together and were able to get him most of his collection back, which is very generous of them. But yeah, that's why you don't do that.
So don't use the cookie sheet.
Yeah, he lost I think it was a fully painted, like, Nightmare Colette crew. He had a very nice painted up, like, Muck crew. And yeah, I think from what I remember, he said it fell out, tipped, launched a bunch of stuff, so a bunch of it was crushed then, and then the vehicle came along and just ran most of them over. I think he said that maybe, like, 3 models in total survived the ordeal. I would have thrown up.
Oh, yeah.
And cried. I would have been very, very upset.
The only good thing is it wasn't GW stuff, so he didn't lose $10,000 worth of things. It was only maybe a couple hundred.
And hours of his sweat and tears.
That true. I mean, the emotional contact is still there, or the emotional impact. Yeah. So you're used to use the cookie sheet. Are you still using the cookie sheet, James?
I still do. So Here's
even after the story, I still use the cookie sheet.
I know it's bad.
I mean, I use them for like storing a whole bunch of my like spare models. So, but I'm trying to do better.
The problem is there are some models, like the new Lord Chompy Bits is a good example. They're not going to really fit in almost any container because they're so huge. So they need to go on some sort of surface. But I know it's a dangerous game. And I am going to eventually invest in one of the metal sheets things.
If you do... because of this, and I kind of learned the hard way, I also invested in one of them. Thankfully, my partner did the same. Make sure you pre-measure your models first to know how big your tallest model is, and figure out the spacing between the shelves. Because I bought one, and we got him one, and my emissary is not small enough to fit on my largest gap. So I tend to borrow his instead of mine to at certain times when I need my larger models.
Mm-hmm. So I guess it's probably a good time for me to shill what I have then.
Yes.
Because that is not a problem with mine, because mine has a bajillion different racks on the side, so you can put it at whatever height you deem necessary. I use a Table War case. I think the mid-sized one. They have a massive tower one that I just think is completely ridiculous. It's really nice because it basically carries everything. It's got a nice little drawer thing on the bottom that I have all my widgets and tokens and my decks and all my stuff slides into the bottom with it. And then with at least what I usually bring, I can put in two layers into it just because I have some tall shit, so there's only so much space there. But it's nice because each of the full layer trays are set up so that they have their smaller trays for them. So there's trays, insert trays. So you can take those and you can have them set up where it's like, I have this insert tray that has these models on it, and I have this smaller one that has this, you know, like some tech picks on it. And then you can pop those out and put in other ones. So I'm trying to get more of those so I can just have most of my collection set up to where it's like I have certain keywords on certain trays so I can swap them out, and it makes it a lot easier. I actually plan on buying one of their smaller ones for when I do more long distance sort of traveling, because that is one downside to the case, is it is a little bit heavy. It is. There's a lot of like metal and such, and it's got latches so you can throw a padlock on it. The front is a nice acrylic kind of clear thing, so you can use it as a display. It is not cheap though for a new player. The case I have is a good $170 case, and their small case is probably $110 or so.
Now, when that case, you're in those prices, does that also include the shelving and stuff, or was that just the outside?
When I got it, it came with the I got a deal. It came with the standard shelving plus some additional stuff. I don't know if they have any deals going on currently, but it comes with everything that I typically have with it when I come out. I just got additional stuff as well, because I just want to be able to not have to like pull models off of one tray and replace them with another. I just prefer to have this tray's this tray's this. When I want to bring this, I have to take this tray and put it into the case. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I have multiple cases because I also put like a keyword per per shelf that goes in there.
But with that said, so when I went to Texas recently, I actually didn't bring the Table War case. I brought my old A case with me, because my A case is closer to the size of what the smaller Table War one is. So it's still two layers. You could still probably fit two-ish keywords, depending on the size of the keywords, in the standard A case. I have one of the older ones. They've since actually upgraded their A cases to be a lot nicer than the one I currently have. And I honestly plan on giving my current A case away to one of the new players downstate when I replace it with a new Table War. A case is great. The dude that runs A case is an absolute like unit. Like the dude's his customer service is fantastic. I actually bought his magnetic painting handle thing recently, where it's a little handle where it's got different magnetic heads that slap onto it, and you can take your magnetized models and put them on there and spin it. So you don't need to touch the model to spin it around. It's great. It's a good price. I don't mean to shill for another company, but I like their products. I couldn't tell you what sort of case Derek has. He has another nice magnetic case, but
I think
he's
a lot of us in the Detroit and Toledo area, we might have to do this because it's Battle, not Battle Foam, but or Army something. I don't even remember actually what my own case is. I'll look it up and we'll put it in the thing. They're slightly more expensive, but they come pre-set out with a bunch of different magnets. Or you can also get, and I used to use this a lot, but the foam trays, you can get foam cases. I don't recommend it for Malifaux. It works for a lot of other places, but anyone going into this game, if you're looking at types of ways to carry things, foam is a decently cheap option. Sometimes it can still be expensive, but the models in Malifaux do not take kindly to foam because they are such odd shapes and usually don't fit inside the nice little neat cubes that you get in those foam trays.
Yeah, honestly, foam cases, they're nice for certain things, but Malifaux has too many thin fiddly bits that are going to get caught in the foam and break. That I really would not suggest foam for these
Too many
models.
spears and little tiny short guns and beards and lanterns that stick off of things in this.
Yeah, Lord forbid you put the Leilitu in one of those things with its crazy whip, and you're just going to lose it. It's just going to be gone.
Well, that happened to me because I did that. But I do have a phone case, and I do still use it. I've had it since the start. So there are some models that fit pretty well into the phone, especially ones that are on 30 mm bases can be good for foam. The problem is that less than half of my models will get into the foam case. I play Neverborn, and a lot of our stuff is big and monstrous, so especially stuff that's 40 or 50 millimeter, you would need a lot of those cases in order to actually fit those all in there. And another issue with foam is you have to cut them to specific levels to make sure that your model isn't literally bouncing around while you are driving with it. And remembering which one is for which one is another kind of special nightmare that I created for myself and abandoned very quickly. So yeah, I guess foam is a pretty mixed bag. Probably marginally cheaper than a magnetic case. If you're really looking for a budget, so this is what I did with my Warhammer stuff. You can just go buy a tub, a plastic tub, go get a sheet of metal, drill holes in the bottom of the tub, and screw the metal to the bottom. So that will give you a huge area protected by a lid on the top to store models, and that was really good for Warhammer specifically. But I could imagine you could fit decent amount of Malifaux models in there, and that's
So
like a super budget.
you own something like this, but you still bring models on a cookie sheet?
I actually gave it away when I sold my Nurgle stuff.
Was about to say, I've seen your cookie sheet, and it's like, mind you, people, it's not just models on the cooking surface of the cookie sheet. He's got them hanging off the lips and shit.
Oh yeah, I did.
Like he's got models on there with total reckless abandon.
Yep, for crews that I'm definitely not going to play that day, just because I like to for people to see them.
I've seen choppy bits hanging off that cookie sheet.
Yeah, he's fallen, but he's big and strong, so he didn't break.
I mean, you could probably bludgeon somebody to death with that model, and the model would be fine.
He's kind of one of a kind, up there with probably one of those Huggy sculpts, I could think.
Yeah, the massive alt. I have that model. I had to orientate it facing upward so I could put it on the table and not have it get caught on everything.
I bet.
So, kind of going off, we're getting into a past an hour here a little bit, and this kind of has been a little scatterbrained a little bit on the game itself and accessories, but to bring this back into kind of the tips and what we see in the community, and maybe to help some more people out, any suggestions for if you are in your own area and you're short on people, or you're sitting in your local gaming store and you are really trying to recruit any players to building a community, James? I know you've evolved from that very beginner, so any tips to any beginners or to any henchmen to bring in those beginners?
Well, I still learn a lot of beginner tips that are very useful to me as a player. There's just a million different things to consider about the game, and I think that's the best and worst thing about it. There's so many things to learn and remember. You really have to know your opponent's crew as well as your own, especially some crews like Zoraida. You literally have to know their crew better than they do in order to win reliably. Then there's all the kinds of insane rules interactions between your models and then adding another crew's set of breaking the game type rules leads to a lot of complicated situations. So I guess my biggest tip to a beginner is just to play as many games as you physically can. The more games you play, the easier it's going to be for you to get through all of those steps mentally. Even something like running Lucius. I was able to run Lucius 1 in under 2.5 hours. I did lose the game very hard, very fast, but it's possible to run those really complicated crews fast. But it takes a lot of practice, and getting better at the game really is about reps, playing with people who are better than you, absorbing as much Malifaux material as you can. There's a lot of really good podcasts out there now, YouTube series. You can watch battle reports. It's another good way if you don't have time to play games.
I know we're slowly looking into getting all of James's battle reports and games on Vassal up on our own YouTube channel that Breachburn's going to be starting very shortly.
Mm-hmm.
Keep a lookout for that.
Yeah, absolutely. As far as your second question, being a henchman trying to attract people, I think the biggest thing that you can do as a henchman, and the henchman program doesn't exist, so I guess I'm officially saying this, but the best thing you can do is be super, super friendly and really go out of your way to find the things that each individual you're talking to is interested about the game. And like we talked about earlier, there's a lot of different things that attract people. This very successful Plainwell group we've gotten together, there was a couple there. The lady was more interested in the lore. She still does, and continues to know more about the lore than I do, as a person who's been in the game for not many years. Her boyfriend was really hard on the mechanics, and not just erectile function.
but maybe both. Yeah, you didn't rule that out.
So Zach and I kind of mostly Zach, actually, facilitated the game between them. He kind of helped out the lore-focused player, and the mechanically-focused player was kind of able to figure out a lot of stuff on his own, while the less mechanically-focused person needed a little more help. And that led to a really positive experience, I think, for a bunch of people at the shop.
Yeah, she found a lot of joy being, like, first attack of the game, ran up and one-shotted the corpse curator with Teddy and ate him whole, and she found a considerable amount of joy out of the fact that through the mechanics of the game, there was that story beat of this giant teddy bear running up and eating this other model. And from that point on, it was like her goal to just try and eat as many of her boyfriend's models as humanly possible.
Yeah, and I think that's...
She did end up tabling him, by the way. She beat his ass, and she loved every second of it, and it spurned on his competitive spirit, and I think it was a very successful demo.
Yeah, I think those kind of moments are really what the game is about, and especially with the demo games or playing Henchman Hardcore, you know, 30 Soulstone games, whatever, you lose some of that playing with less models and less rules, less things to consider. So I think really making sure in those demo games that everyone gets at least one of those moments where it's like, holy shit, there's a lot to this game. And when you get one of those, whether it's a combo or just a lucky flip, you know, whatever it is, that can be enough to hook you and keep you coming back, even if you lose almost every time, like me.
I know, before I jump over to you, Zach, I just had a couple of things to mention, which is something we've been doing down in Ohio, where we've had a bunch of these new players coming in. Shout out to Derek for getting them all down to Dragon's Roost. But the biggest thing is, as long-term players, even as hardcore or tournament players, you won't have anyone good to play against unless you teach more people to play the game. Mm-hmm. So even if it feels weird or you're thinking, oh, I'm taking my week off of playing a great game to slow down and teach somebody, do your due diligence, take the responsibility as the community, and help teach them. I mean, hopefully there's enough people around that you can kind of, you know, cycle through and they get more things, but I think it's more on us experienced players to make sure we're taking the time out to let them have enjoyable games, you know. And for me, I would say I've never been a fan of henchman hardcore as like the starting point. I've always like, okay, we're going to give you the full 50 points so you see it. We don't expect to get through the game, but maybe just focus on the strategies. Don't worry about the schemes yet, but you're going to see the amount of models and you're going to get the mechanics down of the game and build up with the right number of models and, you know, start off small, even it much as it hurts. Maybe as a, you know, the experienced player, don't go in and just massacre their stuff. Maybe take more double walk actions until they get used to it. Let them experience the fun part before you trounce them.
I was about to say, for the love of God, don't beat the crap out of these new players. I've heard too many horror stories about, like, that dude at that one store who just, like, oh, yeah, it's this person's first experience with this game, who just, you know, and then they just proceed to absolutely 8-0, just beat them into the ground and just make it seem like it's a completely lost cause. Like, those guys can go screw themselves. Like, you're not cool. That's not fun for anyone but you being a douche. And, like, you've now officially made it so you don't have anybody to play with. So don't be that guy. Make the experience fun. By all means, let them beat you up. Like, just let them do the things on their cards so they can experience the joy of putting that together for themselves. Please. Also, like, to that further point, like, to anybody who's trying to build a community, like, if you're trying to figure out what you need to focus on getting to try and establish that beyond just having the things necessary for multiple people to play, like, if you can try and put together, like, get the terrain necessary, try and, like, put together a really nice presentation of what the game can be, that seriously helps.
Yeah, I was just gonna also mention a friend of the show, Jim. He and I have talked a lot about different ways to approach introducing the game. And one thing you can do, especially if you're playing against somebody who literally just has the core box and maybe an other model, is you can take a crew that you like, and this is typically would be against a more experienced player. You can take any crew you want, and it doesn't matter if they're negative play experience, but you try to build a crew out of basically your core box and adding minions to that crew. But really the goal is to reduce the number of cards that your opponent has to read. So I did this with Euripides against somebody recently. I brought Euripides, the Totem, all the Cultgeists, all the Gigants, and two Cyclops. So that's a pretty bad list. But because my opponent was a lot newer to the game, it gave them an opportunity to get a footing without me having to baby them and walk them through every little thing I'm doing. I reduced the amount of mental load on them by reducing the amount of cards they had. And I was still able to play the game pretty much, I wouldn't say 100%, but I was trying probably, you know, 80-90%. And it gave us a pretty good game. I still lost the game, but I think it definitely was a good learning environment for people. So, just my 10 cents.
I know there's a... Sorry. I had a burp for a second. Cut that out, James. All of this winds up to saying that we all started somewhere. I know, again, this was a little bit all over the place. You don't need all the accessories, the widgets. You might be, you know, really into it for the fluff. But I think Malifaux has a great community, and I'm really glad to be a part of it. On those accessories, I'm just going to say weird if you ever can get an artist to make these awesome widget sets like I are out there for some of the other games that have the artwork right on them. So each one's like individual, like master or faction. I would definitely give you all of my money to buy them as well. So if you want to look into that, I'd love to own like Malifaux widgets.
Yeah, we're all suckers.
We want to give you more money because as we get in to being longer players, it's all that little stuff that extra makes you feel better about the game because it all looks so but that's about all I had on today. You know, we all started somewhere. We're all, at least for us, are in that tournament kind of category now for players. I guess just reach out if you are a newer player to anyone around, because this community is pretty good compared to other games. You know, get out to a con, try to get to a bigger one if you can, and just to meet people, get on the Discords, listen to these podcasts. I'd love to, if you're in the Michigan area, you know, reach out to James, reach out to us out here at Breachburn, and we'll find someone for you to play against, to learn the game, even if you're interested.
Absolutely. Make sure to check out the show notes. I have a resource sheet going for newer players, but yeah, we'll keep adding stuff onto it. And there's a lot of kind of little details, especially when you're starting out, knowing where things are. So hopefully you guys find that helpful. Thanks for listening.